Okay, so today we have a package of papers and presentation. We're considering these papers at an IASB meeting because we think that the underlying differences in financial statement presentation in US GAAP and in IFRSs mean that different considerations apply to US GAAP and IFRSs. We believe that presentation, as opposed to measurement of changes in insurance contract liabilities, should consider the presentation of changes in the related assets, because both preparers and users consider the effects of the assets and liabilities at the same time. We have four papers to discuss today. Paper 6A asks the boards to confirm that it does not want to introduce new requirements specifically for assets held to back insurance contract liabilities, either in the insurance contract standard or in IFRS 9. Papers 6B to 6D discuss how the boards could reduce accounting mismatches in profit or loss through presentation. Papers 6B to 6D are for discussion only, and we do not ask for decisions on those papers at this meeting. We'll discuss the content of these papers with the Insurance Working Group on Monday, and we'll take the output of the Insurance Working Group meeting and today's meeting, and expect to ask the board for a decision at the meeting and at the end of May. I'd like to start with the discussion papers first, as I think they'll provide context for Agenda Paper 6A. So, Leslie, would you mind introducing us to 6B?
No, thanks so much. If we can move on to Agenda Paper 6B. As Andrea was saying, it's a non-decision-making paper. Many are concerned that the current measurement approach in the ED would create an accounting mismatch if assets are measured at amortized cost. Insurers feel that they should not be forced to use the fair value option. They also feel that the effects of the change in insurance contract liability and the related assets should be considered at the same time and not in isolation. Furthermore, they noted that IFRS 9 permits an entity to eliminate or reduce an accounting mismatch by adjusting the measurement of the assets. The staff proposes that when assets are measured on an amortized cost basis, the accounting mismatch could be eliminated from profit and loss by presenting the mismatch part in OCI. However, the mismatch would not be eliminated from equity or from ACI. A potential solution to not present volatile information in profit or loss is to lock the discount rate at the date of inception, with all interest rate movements between the locked and current rate being presented in ACI. So effectively, it is using a locked-in approach to present volatile information in ACI, and that's what we would like to have your views on.
Okay. Laura, you know, it's a brief introduction.
We know you've got a lot to say on the topic.
So I understand why the staff has developed this paper, and we've heard the comments that you've made often, particularly in this part of the world, I think, but not only here.
If you don't mind,
can you
speak up?
Sure. So it's understandable, and it is an alternative, but it's not one that I support. I think we're trying to, and your papers cover this in other areas, we're trying to deal with this issue of volatility, and I think we've looked at a whole range of possible approaches for dealing with that. We've had a discussion on the discount rate. I think we've come up with an approach that I think is sensible, and I think it's responsive to concerns that we've heard. It doesn't deal with all of the so-called volatility effects, but I actually think it, at least in respect of certain products, deals significantly with the issues that people were concerned about. We had a discussion already now about participating policies, and I think the decision that the ISB has made on participating policies deals with a lot of the concerns in this part of the world regarding volatility. We're going to talk about presentation and how you might disaggregate information in the income statement in a way that focuses on the so-called underlying insurance operations and the effects of volatility. And so I actually think we've done a lot to deal with it, and I don't see the need to go to this next step. It raises this issue of OCI again, which I think the board has, in a number of different circumstances, said this keeps coming up. We haven't had a considered discussion about the nature of OCI, when it should be used, questions of recycling and so on, and that we should stay where we are perhaps, and then having had the discussion at some point in the future and made some decisions, then be in a better place to decide when it's appropriate to use OCI. I'm also very concerned about the use of OCI breaching a fundamental principle that we've held dear to since I've been on this board, and that is that the effect of changes in circumstances, conditions on the value of derivatives should be recognised each period, that is measured each period at fair value, and recognised in P&L, in the income statement, except obviously if you're involved in cash flow hedging. This would breach that fundamental principle and you would be showing those effects in OCI, and I don't like that either. So there's a whole lot of reasons why I think it's not a good idea at this stage to do that, notwithstanding the concerns that have been expressed about us in effect limiting the choices for insurers in respect of the application of IFRS 9. But I think we have been very responsive to the concerns about volatility, and I don't think we need to go this extra step.
Okay. Can I ask a question to Warren?
Okay, that's it.
Right, so Warren, so the volatility of net income is a very big issue, and many comments pointed out this one. So, and you just suggested we should not go further to the next stage, which is presented in here. So, do you have any good idea to reduce the volatility, or that volatility is just a reflection of the economic mismatch? So then we should leave it as it is. I'd like to know your response to the comment.
Well, I think a number of the proposals that that we've agreed to are directed to at least trying to deal in some way with the accounting mismatches, and certainly that was the discussion on participating policies. I think the work we've done on discounting also, to some extent, endeavours to deal with an accounting mismatch. As I said before, believe that the effects in terms of derivatives, embedded derivatives, should always be shown in income. And so I just put that aside. If there's economic volatility, and I know that's a concern in your part of the world, then to the extent that it's true economic volatility, and it's not something that you could characterise as resulting from an accounting mismatch, then I continue to believe that that should be shown in the income statement transparently, and that to the extent that it's an issue in terms of the way in which the users of the accounts might interpret that, then I think we need to look at that in the discussion we're going to have on presentation and how you might disaggregate the information to show the effects of changes during the year, and mainly it's on interest rates, separately from the underlying insurance operations. So I think that that's as far as we need to go, Tatsumi, at this stage.
Yeah, okay,
thank
you.
I don't have any other ideas, to be honest, about how you might go. Other than OCI, I don't have any other ideas.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, Elka?
I think, Warren, I agree with you. We have addressed volatility in various forms, and from discount rate over participating contracts. And we've always said, and the third leg to that is presentation. Now, we definitely have different ideas whether you can address presentation by operating profit, but then still you have to say what's above and below the line, or whether you make something that barks like a dog, that smells like a dog, and that behaves like one. Call it a dog.
Actually,
yeah. Well, in my part of the world, it's normally using a dog for that example. And I think so, even if you go one step back, I know that you're definitely not in favor of LCI, you still have to consider how to put the drawing line in between an operating and performance and whatever you call the rest. And I think the idea of addressing the volatility, which in my belief is neither a mismatch of pure accounting volatility, nor is it depicting really economic reality if I'm showing quarterly changes on a liability that is running for the next 30 years. That's movers in embedded value that create a lot of noise and make it very difficult to see the underlying real performance or value of that liability. But at that point I have to say, and how do I distinguish that? Do I leave it up to companies to say, make up whether you use an expected, you lose a lock-in or whatever, above the line, below the line? So I think even if we disagree whether it's operating and the rest of your annual performance or whether it is the one above net income and the one below, you still have to solve the question, what goes above and below? And I think the paper was by far more about what goes above and below and the idea how to come up with a comparable solution to that.
Okay.
And I'm clearly in favor to get that volatility out.
We've got Philippe, John, and Steve.
I think the issue is not whether or not to reflect this economic volatility. We clearly have decided that we do not accept a locked-in discount approach. It must be a current measurement, hence volatility will be reported. The question is how to report it, whether it is an element of the current performance and which type of performance it is. This board has already in the past, at least when dealing with foreign currency translation effects, accepted that they go to OCI because they are not reflective of the current performance of the entity, whereas they reflect some change in the value or in the equity of the entity, but not its performance. The board has recently accepted on a very similar matter, which is discounting pension liabilities, that remeasurement of discounting for pensions should go to OCI. Here we have a relatively similar situation, I think. The measurement of the discount rate for insurance liabilities, which may be of the same duration as a pension liability, might be a 30 years duration as a pension liability. It's likely to reverse or to change directions many times before it comes to maturity on a quarter after quarter basis, but year after year or decade after decade, you will see swings in discount rates going upwards and downwards. And if we find it smart to do it for pension liabilities, I think we are not inconsistent in dealing in the same manner for discounting insurance liabilities. So to me, it's not an issue. It's a way to take care of concerns that people have with reporting this volatility as an element of profit and loss, which may not be representative of the business of insurance companies, so I support the staff proposal.
I tend to agree with Warren on this one. But I the first time. But I've got a number of observations he didn't make. The industry is claiming a disadvantage because we provided a fair value option to take care of a mismatch. It seems to me that in doing that, if someone elects the fair value option, they've got to show the economic mismatch. Here,
what we're doing is saying we're going to take a piece of this and stick it in OCI. And I'm not sure whether we're really covering up a mismatch, an accounting mismatch, or whether we're preventing someone from seeing a true economic mismatch. And some of the issue I see with this is how to operationalize it. You would make this a choice. Is it a choice the way you would a fair value option forever? And how do you do that with an open portfolio of liabilities, particularly the way we measure it? Or is it a choice you make period by period based on some assessment of a mismatch? And so you haven't explained that. I don't know how to do it. But it also seemed to me that if this is a disadvantage and we say, okay, let's do OCI, I could see everyone else using fair value options saying, well, now we're disadvantaged because we've got to put this in income. We want to do OCI too. Where does this stop? So I'm with Warren.
Steve?
Well, somewhat surprising, I'm with Warren as well.
And John.
And,
not that far.
I think we've done a lot on the discount rate, the participating contract, the decision yesterday, and potentially on presentation, as Warren said. And I think I'm hoping that's enough. I like the presentation on the last page of paper 6A and separating out the assets backing insurance contracts, changes in the insurance liability for changes in discount rate. So this would be my first solution in terms of volatility, what we've so far done. My last favorite solution is what the staff have proposed. I think there are others in between. And I think that we're just going to create a mismatch in OCI. I think it destroys the usefulness of OCI as any measure of performance because you've got a change in the insurance liability and assuming that the assets are at cost, there's no change in the assets, so OCI becomes completely meaningless. I think equity becomes meaningless and potentially enormously volatile, even having negative equity as a result of remeasuring one and not remeasuring the other. So I think, sure, it solves an income statement problem, but it creates more problems elsewhere. Also agree with Warren that it's going to be difficult to differentiate the interest rate effect from the change in the fair value of the derivatives, and I'd be very reluctant to see changes in guarantees and the like not going through the income statement and being hidden within this somewhat meaningless OCI number as a result. I strongly believe that we need a current solution to this, and I think that by the presentation that I've highlighted in 6A, we can get that solution and we can isolate the market-based fluctuations, the quarterly fluctuations from the rest. Now, my second solution to it is that those last few lines in that table in paper 6A are put in OCI. So my second solution would be the assets backing insurance contracts route. If we wanted to remove it from net income, then I think we should do that. And I don't agree with the staff. We're going to go on, presumably, to the other paper. I don't agree with the staff conclusions about the assets backing insurance contract liabilities. That's the way I would do it. I actually think another approach that we could explore is the hedge accounting route. I think there is a possibility there. That would enable assets to be kept at a cost measure and then using a hedge accounting approach to provide an element of offset. But that would be more work because of that would require an extension to the hedge accounting rules that we've got, and it would probably be a macro hedging model. So that would probably create a lot of complexity. But that would be my third option in terms of eliminating volatility, and trailing a long way behind the others, I'm afraid, is the staff recommendation.
Okay, thanks, Steve. BK?
I agree with starting with Warren, John, and Steve that perhaps the OCI route is too much to go to, and I don't want this board to be remembered for expanding the use of OCI than anybody else, and that thought bothers me the most. I think I have a similar suggestion that Steve had, is that if you want to show it to reflect it, perhaps the route that 6A goes down is a amenable route to go down to, just to show that. And just to Philippe's comment about the pensions, I just want to tell you that I voted against there, so I am consistent in voting again here, no? So I have not been inconsistent there. I just want to highlight that.
Okay, any other comments? Okay.
Just like to give it another try. We had the insurance working group meeting, and I think we need to acknowledge that within the industry, but also I think from my recollection, a number of the analysts said net income is a metric number. Now, when you consider that you've got contracts running 30 plus years, quarterly changes, despite what we have done to the discount rate and on participating contracts, quarterly changes can make this number a very volatile number. And the question is on a contract that you are fulfilling in 30 years' time, is the change in year one between quarter one and quarter two a predictive information for what is actually going on with the contract? And I think this is where staff comes from, and where, in line with what Philippe said, I think we have used the OCI for storing this kind of, call it, market noise there. And we are not, and staff is not recommending any kind of recycling, so it's not the old battle we are struggling with.
David, can I say something?
Yes, of course.
Right, so I have a lot of trouble to make my decisions, because in normal cases I'm on Warren's side, as the trouble I have is now as Philippe pointed out, in IS-19 we have already responded to the comment letters, and comment letters there are a lot of worry about to recognize change in actuarial gains and losses to recognize as part of net income, and we responded and to decided to put some changes in return on plan asset in OCI. So, obviously, I against that, but say, in this case, I think that the volatility here could be enormous, and so even though it could be easier for us to say it's sort of the economic mismatch, and it should be shown on the face of as part of net income. So,
okay.
Same position.
So
I thought this was going to happen.
You guys from here?
No,
I've got a switch here. I wish I had one for all of you. I'm out of
I basically agree with others that comment that we've made a lot in order to address mismatch for this specific industry, and not only the industry itself, but these specific types of instruments. And I'm a little bit concerned of the effect of all these decisions in a consolidated accounts when you have a bank that controls an insurance company, and then we'll have different attributes to measure liabilities on a consolidated basis. So we'll have financial instruments issued by the banks under one measurement attribute. We have insurance contracts issued by the insurance piece of the group measured under one attribute, and we have participating contracts issued by that insurance piece of the group measured at another attribute. And we are trying to address mismatch for a specific type of industry. So I think I agree that we have done maybe a lot to address mismatch in this specific industry. And my question is this going to be discussed with the group on Monday? And what is the outcome that the staff is expecting of the discussion? Is a technical one, or is a sort of potential effects of the decisions?
On Monday, you mean?
Yeah, on Monday.
Well, first of all, I think we'd like to gauge the interest of the group in this proposal and see what their reaction is to it. And secondly, we'd like to know operational difficulties.
Operational difficulties?
Yes, to address some of the concerns.
What sort of operational?
Portfolios like John mentioned.
It would be whether they can make this workable or not.
Not clear to me, because basically we are addressing here the difference on the discounts. So the discount rate.
Effectively, what you're doing is splitting the change in liabilities and trying to put one piece in one place and another piece in another place. There may be difficulties in identifying cleanly those two different pieces, and it would be in where the difficulties lie there.
That's what I guess this will be, because we are only dedicating here attention for one piece of the measurement building blocks to isolate and trying to reduce mismatch of this piece.
It's about taking the change in the liability and disaggregating it.
It's only about the presentation.
And how will you present the
pieces? Yeah, it's about the presentation.
Same problem we had in open portfolios, we will have it here.
Okay, I'm going to move on. I hope you don't mind those who have spoken before, because this is only an education session. We're going to come back to this. If Pat and Weigel can be very brief, because we've got three other papers to do within the hour.
The other two papers, sorry, David, support this one.
I
so
that,
I think
but I want them to go through it.
Let's be brief.
I understand.
I will be brief. I made an observation during the lease education discussion we held this morning, which some of you attended. I am absolutely convinced that we will not settle the age-old debate around volatility through recognition and measurement principles. We have people lined up on both sides of this issue, irrespective of whether they come from a specific industry group or whether or not they represent some other faction. So I believe presentation and display is the only way to solve this, and if we're going to do that, we should do it consistently across all projects. And I think having a multi-step income statement is one approach. Greater use of OCI, which the board has already shown a willingness to do, and several projects is another approach. But this is advice that we received from the SEC staff at the end of 2008. When the issue around fair value measurement was at its apex, and all the controversy about how to deal with fair value measurement, all these issues are no different. And so I think we should heed that advice, and both boards should try to come to a common position around presentation and display, because I don't think we're going to solve these issues. And we could discuss them for another 10 years. So that's my view on this.
You mean generally, not just in...
Generally.
Where are you on this one?
I think that if you are going to be prepared to allow the use of OCI in certain areas of accounting, certain industries, you have to be permitted to use it here. So I would support the direction the staff is going in here. I'm open to other presentation alternatives, but I think we have to consider, yes, the use of OCI.
Can you allow it for exit then? Is there any option for OCI?
That's where it's going to go.
Possibly.
Okay, then that's a bigger issue. Boygo?
Very short, I suppose. the what Pat just said.
No, that was very short. Thank you.
We'll start.
Okay, can we move on? It's still related to the same issue. This is the implications in 6C. I just want to look through those.
Okay, I think if we move on.
That was into an
Oh, yeah. Tatsumi, do you want to finish again?
Oh.
You could be brief.
I haven't decided yet, so I would like to hear from a member of the insurance working group on this issue.
A Japanese one or anyone?
David, so anyone. Do you remember that last time I got the same question from John?
Oh yeah, I do. Yes.
He was quite sure you made that statement when you were in Japan.
Okay. Pat, do you want to come in? Patricia, are you there?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hello? Oh, wonderful. Just to be brief, I agree with what Warren and John and PK said about the paper.
Okay, thank you. Split down the middle. Split down the middle.
What is that all?
But I'm really Sorry? Steve has a good idea for solving the OCI issue that Pat raised.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The whole income statement.
That's my master plan.
Come on, children, pay attention. Okay, B. C, rather.
Okay, moving on to agenda paper 6C. It discusses some of the practical implications of using a lock-in discount rate. And it covers four areas. The implication of using a lock-in discount rate when crediting rates are floating. How to treat guarantees that are dependent on interest rates. Whether unused contract tests should be required when the discount rate is locked. And how to disclose the rates in mismatches. On floating crediting rates, I don't think we see specific issues in that regard. Because the floating rate instruments measure the amortized cost, the effective interest rate set right is set at inception and adjusted at later dates. Staff believe a similar methodology should be followed when considering the locking of the discount rate for insurance contract liabilities for which the crediting rates are floating. In other words, the discount rate should not be locked when the crediting rate is floating. By not locking the discount rate, there would be no difference between periodically reassessing the interest rate when a locked in approach is followed or by just using a market consistent approach. Staff relief, therefore, an insurer is not likely to elect to present the effect of discounting rate changes in ICI if the crediting rate is floating. I don't know if you've got any specific concerns or comments on that part.
Any points anyone wants to make?
David, where we are?
Well, you're back, Tatsumi.
I have a lot of trouble to be connected. So, and we are in a 6C?
6C, yeah.
Oh, okay.
6C.
Oh, IFRS 9. How can you not about here?
Any other points?
Clarification, because I am. Is the staff thinking this would be standing on its own, irrespective of the decision about the overall discount rate, or is it linked to that? In the sense that, can we take this in isolation? Not that I'm favoring, I'm just asking.
This paper assumes that you do 6B. It doesn't make sense without the decision 6B.
So should we not get an indicative vote then before
we're
go
not, on? This is a non-decision.
Indicative vote, which David likes very much.
Depends. No, this is one FASB want to get involved with this quite a bit, so I didn't want to do this thing. This is just the implications. If you're in favour, here are the implications. Gabe and then John.
I'd like to go back just one moment to the previous paper in the light of the wording in this one, where sometimes you say should be permitted or should be required. Mm-hmm. And your proposal in 6B is to create an option. And that this option would be available in any case or only when there is a mismatch. I mean, if the insurer for some reason decides that he would report assets or most of the assets at current value, then I suppose we would close the use of OCI for the discount rate. We would prohibit or not. It is not clear from the recommendation.
Well, the recommendation would be that you'd be permitted to do it if exercising the option would eliminate or substantially reduce an accounting mismatch.
Okay, so there is a condition for using this OCI that there is a mismatch. So it's either, a current-current or non-current and OCI. That's the system.
Yes.
Okay. Because in paper 6C, you say permitted.
John?
This is asking, would you extend this to options for time and intrinsic value? Where's the mismatch? Do you have to identify another option on the other side that's not being recognized? And it would seem to me, if there is such, there's a good chance that it's at fair value given our IFRS 9 model. So I understand what you're asking us, but I don't know how you're assessing the mismatch.
I think if there's a mismatch, you could then use the option to put the volatile piece into OCI, but then we'd be asking, we wouldn't be asking you to identify the guarantee bit and pull that out into profit or loss, which is, well, my sense to the question, perhaps.
Well, if we bought into OCI, there'd be an accounting mismatch. This says, would you extend it to options? So my question would be, how would you make the assessment that there's an accounting mismatch on the options? I don't know how you're going to make the assessment on OCI to begin with, but that's a different, we already talked about that one. Here, it seems that a lot of those assets wouldn't have these types of options, and so there isn't an accounting mismatch, there's an economic mismatch, which I thought one of the premise things said we would recognize. Alternatively, would you say you've got to go out and find one that offsets it?
I think if you put the thing into OCI, then this automatically is already in OCI, and the question maybe is phrased badly, but it's whether or not you try and pull something out. So I don't think your question is.
I think it's about the presentation of...
If you say it that way, what you're really telling me is you're going to put into OCI things that are not accounting mismatches to begin with.
But included in the insurance contract liability.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I think that the way we envisage this working is at the portfolio level anyway. It wouldn't be a contract level decision. And so if it's a portfolio, it's inevitable that there'll be some things that behave in different ways. I think the assessment of whether it's reducing an accounting mismatch would be an overall assessment. It'll probably increase it in some respects and decrease it in others, and you'll just have to come to
How do you reconcile this with the axioms?
It's a departure from the axioms. But remember that one of the axioms or assumptions, I can't remember which, was that that we would try and avoid accounting mismatches where they are. That's what the first piece of the paper was about. Now, once you've taken that decision to, if you're going to go down the OCI route at the portfolio, the question is, what happens if in that portfolio you've got some embedded options and guarantees? How do you deal with those? This is a sort of follow-on question once you've taken the first decision.
Just on the outreach, maybe that gives some background, because what people asked us is to reduce volatility without the accounting mismatch just by using such a solution. And they would like to see OCI on both sides, obviously, but because they cannot get this, and because these are particularly long-term insurance contracts, where the volatility of the discount rate doesn't matter that much, they would like to use such an OCI option. But it's not necessarily, I think, from the outreach, it's not to solve an accounting mismatch.
I think this is a case where we're talking about balancing axioms rather than meeting one or the other in whole.
We had a different proposal on the discount rates to begin with. We're going to use the current rate. Mm-hmm. And then we moved off of that to help them with volatility. If we're going to go to OCI, would we go back to the rate we thought was the appropriate rate if we're going to stick it in OCI? Or are we making two concessions here?
I actually don't think we changed a lot of the objective of the discount rate. That is the first thing.
That's exactly my point.
What we actually addressed with the discount rate, and that was not a concession, is the problem that a lot of people had with identifying the liquidity adjustment. And that illiquidity can mean a little more than what you actually saw in Solvency II calculation. So we did not move away from the objective, and I think the boards are
I agree with you on that.
It is just that by really laying it out a little differently and explaining it to people what we meant with that objective, we could identify that some of the erratic volatility that people were fearing can be addressed by selecting the discount rate. That is what's different to like a year ago when people were storming against the discount rate decision compared to now. So there's no change in the objective of discount rate, just to clarify that.
They were really against it before, but now they're okay.
Okay, what about the onerous contract? Anyone wants to comment on that?
One of the arguments put forward by the staff for not applying this test in paragraph 17A that the regime in IFRS 9 doesn't include an onerous contract test doesn't hold for me, because there is no such linkage between assets and liabilities in IFRS 9, as we are here dealing with a form of linkage which is more stronger, even if it is not contractual, between the insurance liability and the insurance backing asset. So in IFRS 9, financial assets and financial liabilities live their own separate lives. Hence, the onerous contract test doesn't really apply unless you have a stronger linkage between the asset being financed by the liability or vice versa. In insurance, I think we are here dealing with a form of relationship and asset liability management, which is much more stronger. So I think there might be a need for the onerous contract if the asset return is not sufficient to support, as you said, the insurance liability.
Philip, can I ask a question? Well, I wanted a clarification. You said even for non-participating, was that right?
Yeah, I'm outside. Of course, participating contracts, there is not such a problem because the liabilities will reflect the assets. So you don't have an onerous contract. By definition, any onerous problem with assets will be passed on to the policyholder or to the unit-linked holder. Outside this, really, I'm on the overall asset liability management of an insurance company. It may be that there is an insufficient return on assets, and that locking in the discount rate on liabilities will create an issue, because the loss will not be reflected. The argument that you apply, that there is no linkage in IFRS 9 between assets and liabilities for the purpose of a loss contract, seems to me doesn't apply for insurance contracts, even outside of the policyholder benefits and unit-linked accounts, because really an insurer is managing assets to back insurance liabilities. The banking business is a transformation business, is a bit different. Now, if there was in a banking business, a model where people are really backing assets on liabilities, I would probably question why there is not such an onerous contract as well.
I suppose I'm struggling a bit to see what that relationship, or why the relationship is so much closer in the insurance case. I mean, yes, they're trying to select assets that give the correct degree of matching to the liabilities, but isn't that equally true in a way for banks? I mean, they're managing their interest rate risk and their duration risk and all those things, and they're looking at the assets and liabilities together.
Banks are borrowing money and lending that money with a margin.
Exactly.
So it's different.
But could I go back a step, Philippe? If the reason for putting something into OCI in the first place is to eliminate mismatch with assets held at amortized cost, wouldn't you want to mirror the treatment in the liability then? Otherwise it won't be matched. It's in 17A, basically. The reason for putting something in OCI in the first place, because you have assets that manage carried at amortized cost, and you're trying to create a matching treatment on the liability side. So then it seems to me it makes sense to treat them in the same way as amortized costs would treat them, and that's the logic for not introducing the owner's contract test here.
To think further, but I think they're just drawing a parallel with IFRS 9, which I think doesn't really apply here.
But the reason for doing it is because of the parallel with IFRS 9. Otherwise, we wouldn't be contemplating it.
Philippe, is your point about the banks that to do with fungibility, that the assets and liabilities are more fungible and it's more of an overall pool?
First, the banks are generally applying a cost model when they have assets which are locked in, then liabilities would be at cost as well. So the question of unlocking discount rate would not apply. Now, if I have a situation in banks where I would have assets at current value and liabilities at current value, and you would say part of the discount rate goes to OCI, that would be different, isn't it?
But what we're talking about here is effectively the same thing, isn't it? It's where you'd move the piece that's going through P&L from a locked-in basis to a current basis because of what's happening on the other side of the balance sheet.
Can we move on, Ilka?
Like Philippe, though, I'm full-heartedly supporting staff on the previous paper. I am a bit struggling with this paper and the consequences. And on the onerous contract test, like Philippe, I didn't see the parallel to financial liabilities in IFRS 9. At least I found it a bit of a scary idea. And I would probably have to listen to the working group on Monday and get my way around how to solve the problem if I have, for argument's sake, a portfolio which was taken out under the lock-in assumption of 6% in, now take my home country, at some point in time, unwinding that with a lock-in of 6% would probably make it a nasty moment, the very moment I have to settle a policy. And at some point I would like to have an onerous contract test in to make sure that my liability is adequate to cover what I am able to achieve, which is a bit kind of a loss adequacy testing. And I'm not sure where to put it in. I have to confess I'm just feeling a bit uncomfortable at this point.
Okay, any other comments?
Did I hear correctly that the working group would support a situation where both the asset and the liability interest component would go to OCI? Yeah. Did I hear you say that?
Well, we don't know what they say, but we'd have thought some of them at least, and some of the outreach we've done has indicated that it's quite a strong view that's what they want.
But wouldn't you create a mismatch in OCI then, given that the mark is a portion of the interest and not the...
If you had the assets going through OCI as well?
Yeah. I'm just wondering how that would work. But I want to make sure that's right. I heard you say that.
Why would you?
Why would I what?
Have the mismatch.
Because I'm taking the full fair value of the asset going to OCI but I'm taking a portion of change in value of the liability. What my question was, is that something that they were telling us they would support? And I thought I heard you say yes. I just wanted to digest
that. I think they just want the changes in both the assets and the liabilities going through OCI. So it's a different set of assumptions from this paper.
It's the related variables. It's the interest rate.
What goes through.
But I just wanted to add, whilst some are calling for available for sale, not all jurisdictions are calling for available for sale. It's particularly here in Europe, but not necessarily in all other parts of the world.
Well, I think it's, again, true. It depends a bit on the products they are selling.
Yeah.
And that's why this is by far more problem-focused here in continental Europe to a large extent than in some other parts of the world.
And that's true, and that's why I believe to a significant extent we may have dealt with that through our decisions on participating policies. Not completely.
I don't totally disagree.
Right.
Okay. That's why we have a working group and can put it up in the end.
That was quite a good lead-in to 6C. I don't suppose there's much point going through 6D, Andrea. Is it?
No, not unless anyone's got any questions.
But we don't hear about the maths at all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, can we move to 6A?
Can we quickly do 6D or 9.1? Okay, 6I.
6B.
A4. Agenda paper 6I addresses concerns about volatility in profit and loss when banking assets are measured at fair value. It's a decision-making paper. The ED proposed the current measurements, the current value measurement model for insurance contracts. Many objected that this creates accounting mismatches when assets are held at fair value as permitted by IFRS 9. To avoid this mismatch, many insurers argue that the board should allow changes in the fair value of assets and changes in the current value of liabilities both to be presented in OCI. There are two ways that suggest to achieve this. One is to amend IFRS 9 to introduce a category similar to available for sale. The other is bring assets back in insurance contracts into the scope of the insurance contract standards and provide a similar treatment for them there. The staff noted that the reopening of IFRS 9 would extend well beyond the timescale for completing the insurance contract standard. The staff also believe any special requirements for insurers within the insurance contract standard would make financial statements of insurers less comparable with other industries. It would also lead to accounting arbitrage and financial statement presentation that is less readily understandable. Furthermore, insurers can present disaggregated components within profit or loss in accordance with IS1 as a means of ring-fencing sources of volatility. Volatile and non-volatile parts can therefore be presented separately within profit or loss, as shown in Appendix A or in Appendix. The staff recommend that the board should not introduce new requirements specifically for assets held to back insurance contract liabilities. And we would like to have your views on this.
Okay.
Agreed.
Agree.
David, you're looking surprised, but it's not agreed.
Finally.
To me, the answer to this question depends on the decision to be made on the previous question on the use of OCI for the discount rate. We have to find a solution to accounting volatility. Either on one side or the other one. If we find one on the liability side, that's fine. Okay, don't touch the assets. We can't find one on the liability side. We are bound to reopen the discussion on the assets. We have to choose. But we cannot ignore it.
Fair point.
John? I agree, but it's contingent on what we do in the first paper. If for whatever reason, PK's counting, I don't know how it's going to work out, we vote for OCI, I would vote to open it up.
I didn't get that one.
And I would want something that's consistent where we're not going to get picked apart again that now we favored an industry over someone else.
I didn't get that point.
Pardon me?
What did PK suggest?
My comment was if we vote for the change in the discount rate on the liability, that difference to go to OCI, I would vote to open this up on the asset side. And I would try to get something that's a level playing field for all industries. Okay. And the other problem I have, if we vote for the earlier piece, the liability thing, mm-hmm. I don't think we're showing the true volatility because we're keeping the asset at amortized cost. And I'd rather see all of that in OCI and make it transparent.
Okay. So, thanks.
Can I clarify your position, John? You would not do what is in the other paper, and you would not do this as well? Or you would
that would be my first choice.
First choice.
No and no.
And then if it's yes, then it would be yes, yes.
Yes, yes. Yes. Yes.
No, no, or yes, yes.
No, no, yes, yes.
I agree with half of what John said.
<It's a> yes.
I agree. Well, is the staff recommending this?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with the staff recommendation. It's just premature to consider opening up IFRS 9 at this stage, given where we are with the published standard, the fact that it's been endorsed, number of jurisdictions used by companies at the moment. FASB still has some way to go in terms of its re-deliberations. We don't know when they're going to complete those. Then there's the question of the reaction that we will get to issuance of their document publicly, which we've undertaken to do. That's a long time in the future, and it's all very uncertain. So I would not want to be opening up IFRS 9 at this stage for this particular reason, for this industry, for these contracts. And likewise, I would not want to try and define assets backing insurance contracts and then give them particular accounting, because I don't think you should do that anyway in terms of treating industries differently from other industries in terms of specific requirements. But also I think it's just impossible to make that work in terms of defining that set of assets. So it's a no-no for me. Irrespective of what we decide on the other one.
David, can I say something before I have been cut off?
Okay, you better go quickly.
I totally agree with what Warren said. So I totally support what staff is suggesting. And I do not want to touch the IFRS 9. And also that I do not support to deal with asset side in this insurance project. So I totally support the staff recommendation.
Okay. Steve?
Both of them. I agree with John. If we don't reopen, if we don't use OCI on the liability side, then I don't think we should reopen this. If we do want to use OCI on the liability side, then I think we have to do something on the assets. It doesn't make any sense not to. My preference would be not to reopen IFRS 9 because I don't like available for sale. I don't like recycling. I think it was a good decision to get rid of that. I mean, IFRS 9 is a good standard. So therefore, the only solution that I have is the assets backing insurance liabilities. I don't think it would be an industry standard no more than the insurance contract standard is an industry standard. It's about insurance contracts, and we could, within that standard, make an exception for assets that are backing those insurance contracts. It's not ideal, but I think it would be far better than reopening IFRS 9 in its entirety. The big problem I have with available for sale and using that in the context of insurance is the earnings management through realization. We have that at the moment. And I think one of the big prizes of this project is to get rid of earnings management through realization. And we go back to available for sale, we just perpetuate that problem.
Okay. Okay.
I guess I have nothing else to add, that I agree that you open this, you open the other. And my preference is not to open 9. And that starts from the premises that we should not use OCI for the discount rates. So I'm with John and others who supported him. And so I don't think we should go there.
It just seems to me that if we do the first one, we will hear it all over the world. And that's the, I think it's kind of out of our control. It's the fairness issue that's the whole, we're just going to hear it.
Could I just clarify from PK, please, when you say
The other one, do you mean the assets backing bit of it, or do you mean the IFRS 9 bit of it, or that you'd want to look at both?
The other one being the 6B paper.
The lock-in. Look,
yes, if you go for OCI in 6B, would you want to... So it would be the whole of the 6B paper, or would it be the IFRS 9 piece of it, or the assets backing? Because Steve supports assets backing, John supports IFRS 9.
I don't think we'll be able to contain that.
See, there are... what I'm trying to say is that we definitely played to some extent to the notion that insurance is separate, and we did so many things special for that industry. Case in point, yesterday, participating contracts, where liability has been artificially suppressed. So there is this notion we got people to buy into that insurance is special, so everybody's asking for it. But if you start doing things, I'm telling you, same arguments will come for nine, and I don't think we have a standard to start with. We got to rip it open and do things. There are so many things will happen. And I think that's, I have not been in standard setting for a long time, but I can promise you that's not good standard setting.
Can I just comment on what PK just said? Because I think what we did yesterday wasn't something special for insurance. It was special because of the contractual link between the assets and the liabilities. And the board had already done that, for example, in the instance we cited from business combination.
But that's not so. We if a bank linked its equity to its liability, we would call it a derivative. We'd make them use fair value. We wouldn't say you can ignore it if you own some treasury shares. I think it is an exception,
and that's not exactly an accurate statement of what we said yesterday. It's not that you happen to hold the assets that you're linked to. It's that contractually it's linked to the assets that you have to hold. It's a different fact pattern that we haven't addressed.
If a bank had it contractually linked to its liability, we would call it a derivative.
Yes, but it's not contractually linked to an asset liability. It's contractually linked to performance, a result. More diverse. And there's a difference.
We would call it a derivative, and we would mark it. We wouldn't make an exception.
But this is different. Well, this is not a derivative.
Liability is accurate.
This is not a derivative. If you're going to draw an analogy, draw an accurate one.
It is.
It's not.
It is. It's not. It is. It's not. Wrong.
Would you want?
Okay. Pat, have you any comments? Patricia?
No, I don't have any.
Okay.
Well, I agree. I support the staff position. Other than that, I have no comments.
Okay. Jennifer,
why is David, why you are not asking me?
I thought you told us.
Is this
our side?
Yes, I have no comments.
Yes, he's answered it already. I've written him down.
Yeah, it's getting late. He's been at the sake. You have to expect that. Okay. There are big problems if you want to open up 9, because the way this would be phrased would be more on the basis of bringing back something more akin to available for sale. We have said that we would expose what FASB comes out with. FASB isn't going back to available for sale. They're dealing, if I remember rightly, Jennifer, with debt instruments, but not with equities. So this would be different again. So we'd end up with another problem out there, which should cause problems for FASB in their deliberations as well on a different issue. So it's probably the time is best to wait and see. Okay.
Yes, we should.
Oh, do you want to vote on this one? No, this one, we're voting.
This one is vote.
Sorry, are you voting?
I support staff. I'm already voting.
Oh, I haven't asked the question. I've asked who doesn't support staff.
Ask the question, Leslie.
Okay. Yes, at the end of page 29, does the board agree that it should not introduce new requirements specifically for assets held to back insurance contract liabilities?
Anyone?
Yes, we
got enough votes there to see.
Now, my answer is contingent upon what might happen in 3 months from now.
At this time.
When the ISB reconsiders what the FSB may come out with.
This is just now. This is just
with the facts we have today, we are not opening 9. That's the answer. And I don't think there's anything more to that.
Does anyone feel we should?
It's a bit subject to what we're doing on the other side and whether it really solves the problem. But basically, I'm in line with staff recommendation not to reopen IFRS 9.
Okay. Tatsumi, you the same?
Yes. I do not want to reopen the IFRS 9.
Okay. And you were there too, Pat?
Yes.
Okay. Anything else there? That's us. Okay, well, thanks very much. We'll try and start at 3 if the hedging guys can get ready.
Yep.
Okay. 3 o'clock.
Okay.